Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news. But stand by now for the Worldview. All right, Bob, have the boys put away their guitars. We got to get on with the show now. We don't have a lot of time. We don't have a lot of time to get to an awful lot of news, and I sure do appreciate you being back here on the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. This is the Weekly Worldview, your safe haven of sanity in a world gone mad. I said it. It's a world gone mad. For example, the other night, I'm scanning through the television stations. I come across a show on the Discovery Channel. It's called Invisible Worlds. Truly fascinating programming. They talked about how a lotus works. They talked about the feet on a gecko. And they have these incredible microscopic close-ups of the hairs on the feet of a gecko, and how this gecko manages to stick himself to walls and climb upside down on the ceilings. And it was just fascinating and amazing. Yeah, I really enjoyed the program, except for one thing that kept bothering me. All through the broadcast, they are crediting nature with all these miraculous natural structures. It's nature's miraculous this, and nature's mysterious that, and nature's amazing that. And they're crediting nature, but they're not crediting nature's God. They're not giving credit where credit is due, the God who designed all this stuff. And that's because they're a bunch of Darwinistic heathens who produce the shows there on the Discovery Channel. And they can't mention the name of the living God, the Creator, who deserves all the credit for the gecko and everything else. And I'll tell you, folks, what's happening is truly insanity. Because we've got now three generations of children who've been taught that there's no absolute knowledge that God is real, that he's living, that he's a judge, that he's a king. So who are the kids going to worship? Nature? I guess nature. Maybe they'll end up worshiping the Supreme Court. They'll end up worshiping the government. You see, people are built, they're wired for fellowship. And they're wired for worship because that's the way God made us. And everybody ends up worshiping something. And I'm afraid that we're going down a road toward the worship of things that is destructive rather than constructive. What have you handed me here? I've just hot off the presses. This is the USA Weekend magazine out of this week's Denver Post. And there's a picture of Barry Ho and his M.O. And Michelle is holding a turkey. Let's see, and you've got little Malia and Sasha and the dog that Teddy Kennedy gave them, and then the mother-in-law, and then who's this guy in the corner? I don't think that's Clarence Thomas. I doubt they invited him. Some other fellow there on the cover of your USA Weekend from the newspaper. You just did that to throw me off, right? Michelle Obama holding a turkey as if they have any respect for anything that's traditional or American. You know, I sent a note to a friend on Facebook. He posted a depressing message that I forget exactly how it went. He said that a man can be called truly rich when his children run to him with open arms, even when his hands are empty. And he ended it by saying, I fear I will never be truly rich. And I had just gotten off the road, gone for a few days, and when I walked in the door, it was probably 8 or 9 o'clock at night, and all three of my daughters, the 10-year-old, the 4-year-old, the 2-year-old, they ran to me with open arms, and they shouted, Daddy, and they jumped on me and hugged me, and I thought about my friend's note on Facebook, and I thought, you know, I am truly rich. I am a truly rich man, and by the way, my wife ran to me with open arms, too. You did. Of course you did. And anyway, I sent him a note just saying that I really felt for him. I pray for him. And I was just so blessed on this uniquely American and uniquely Christian holiday, of Thanksgiving to have my family, my kid, even my 10-year-old. You know, a lot of 10-year-olds are jaded by the time they're 10. They don't necessarily like to see dad come home, but not so here in the McBurney compound. What's the question here?
You think he gets to open up?
You think Malia and Sasha run to Barry?
You
know, they probably do. I mean, who knows? I mean, Barry, at least, you know, he's managed to keep his marriage together for the moment. Not that I'm thinking there might be anything going on there. Well, that's true. Clinton kept his marriage together as well. So, you know, that reminds me of, well, first of all, traveling, folks. If you haven't flown recently, and I haven't, I've been avoiding flying as much as I can. But I had to fly this week. Last week, because I had to go to Fredericksburg, Virginia, and I just wasn't going to drive. But I got to the scanner, and this 22-year-old TSA agent pulls these two bags out of my luggage, and he said, "You know, you got two bags of liquids here. You're only allowed one. One of them's got to go." He said, "You've got to choose what goes and what stays." And I said, "Well." And I reached out to touch him, and oh, my goodness, it was as if I had tried to assault the young lad. He said, no, you can't touch. You can only look, and you can choose. Wow. And I said, you know, when your mother was changing your diapers, I was in the Marine Corps. Are you really going to take my shampoo? And he looked a little sheepish, and he said, sir, there's nothing I can do. You've got it. So anyway, I lost my shampoo on the way and my conditioner and a $60 bottle of skin lightening cream.
Oh, yeah.
That was my, because I wasn't allowed to touch. I was only allowed to look, and I didn't want to hold up traffic. It was just a nightmare. I felt as if I was in prison. I was like, why don't you just strip me naked and search me right here in front of everybody?
Don't say that, David.
For crying. Okay. Yeah, I didn't say that out loud. Anyway, just a nightmare. A nightmare. And then on the way back, I lost a goodly sized bottle of mouthwash. You know, as if they want to subject everyone on the plane to my breath. You know what I noticed, too, on the 4-hour flight from Washington International? Up to about 3 hours into the flight, the air is perfectly breathable. But that last hour, everything smells like an old shoe. All I could think of was, you know, there's bacteria and viruses just crawling down my throat at this point. You know, I would almost rather drive for 3 days next time if I have to go back to Fredericksburg. Now, quickly on Fredericksburg, while I was in Fredericksburg, Virginia, I visited the battlefields at Fredericksburg and Chancellorsville, and it was an eerie scene because it was foggy, hazy, and a light rain was falling, and there I stood at the stone wall of Fredericksburg, and as I went from one site to the next, there were plaques that described the battle and various stories of what happened, and I honestly broke down and I wept. I wept for my fellow man, and I prayed to God that he would spare our nation from a repeat of anything like what happened at Fredericksburg and at Chancellorsville. And if you ever have an opportunity to go, it's worthwhile, especially if you're not very familiar with the Civil War or American history in general. And I just want to say to the kids in the Occupy movement who are being manipulated by nefarious forces far more devious than these foolish children understand, that you just don't realize what could happen if you actually bring it all down, man. You really don't get it, you foolish, ignorant children. Go back to your mom's house. Anyway. I get annoyed. Okay, what can I say? Do I want to just get into the news here? You know, my first story involves... My first story involves deviant behavior. Not the second and third. Well, all right, so we won't go to the news. Okay, let's go to the Republican debate last week. We all know that Newt Gingrich is the new favorite now. It's becoming so much more clear as the campaign unfolds that Republicans just can't stand Mitt Romney. We just won't do it. And, you know, Newt said something in the debate that I agreed with. He was asked a tactical question about a no-fly zone in Syria, I believe. And Newt said, you know, we don't need to be talking about tactical answers. We need a long-term strategic answer. And I agree with Newt on that. We need some long-term strategic thinkers. I'm not sure Newt's the guy, but you know what? I'm going to get back to this because I have a long-term strategic plan that Mr. Gingrich might be interested in. Let's see. I thought I had something on Iran. Did I have something on Iran? Oh, yes. The Iranian official, their high counselor on human rights. This may have been this past week. It may have been the week before. I can't remember. The fella's name is Mahudahana Nunamanadina Jad Larnindajani. Wait a second. Madanahanajad Larijani. He's the Iranian High Council on Human Rights, which I wasn't aware that they had one of those, but they do. And he said that the Iranian nuclear research is purely for... It's purely for civilian energy-generating purposes. And what the desire of Iran is to conduct this research and development and to share it with all the countries around us. I thought, well, that's true. Iran definitely wants to research and develop nuclear weapons and then share them with as many countries as they possibly can in the immediate vicinity and beyond. Anyway, I might have got it. I think it was Madadinajad Larijani. I apologize to Mr. Larijani for perhaps mispronouncing his name. Just a few too many vowels there. I get a little mixed up. The NASCAR thing. Now, I know this might seem like old news to people because I've been gone. I got to make a living out there. And I'll tell you what, in this Obama recovery, it's not as easy as you might think. Well, I probably don't have to tell you. At a NASCAR event, either this week or last week, the crowd booed Michelle Obama.
Oh, yeah.
I chuckled. I thought it was cute, and I thought, well, hey, you know, that's a NASCAR crowd. They're pretty conservative. But on discussing the issue further with my extremely attractive audio engineer, now I've gotten sidetracked. We were talking about Michelle Obama. She said, look, don't take any comfort in a NASCAR crowd booing Michelle Obama, because if they would have put a stripper up there in front of them, they would have all cheered. And I couldn't argue with that, you know. Michelle gets booed at a NASCAR race. What does it mean for America? Not much. We're still circling the drain, unfortunately. All right. So there I've gotten my my slam of M.O., out of the way early in the broadcast. And now we'll go right into the news here, folks. Okay. I got an article here from WorldNet Daily about Rush Limbaugh. And this is regarding the Penn State homosexual pedophile scandal surrounding assistant coach Sandusky. WorldNet Daily reports that on Limbaugh's November 8th program, Limbaugh said, quote, you know, if I really wanted to retire today, I could answer you in a way that would end my career. Well, of course, I'm therefore not going to say it, but there is a part of this story, and it's glaring. It's right up front in front of everybody, and nobody's got the guts to say it. Nobody, including me, I don't have the guts to bring it up. Nobody does. That's November 8th, ladies and gentlemen. Well, Limbaugh said nobody actually has the guts to actually give an explanation for what's going on and why there was trepidation in reporting Mr. Sandusky's behavior. But Limbaugh said, well, that's all I'll say. If you can figure it out on your own, fine and dandy. Okay, so we move forward now. 10 days later, Mr. Limbaugh, for 10 days, sat cowering, afraid to utter the phrase that may possibly end his career. He was so afraid, he wouldn't address it for 10 days. Well, on November 18th, he finally said what the problem is. It's that Sandusky's obviously a homosexual, and you're simply not allowed to bring up the fact that a molestation has occurred within the homosexual community, because if you do that, well, it could very well end your career. Limbaugh said, quote, but yeah, he said it's not so much pedophilia, although that's what this is. It's that Sandusky has to be a gay guy. Nobody's mentioning that aspect because it's too dangerous. And the reason why is because of the power of the gay lobby, which is very leftist. But, Limbaugh said, I don't want to be misunderstood. Sandusky does not represent all of homosexuality, just like the priests in the Catholic Church don't represent all of homosexuality, just like the aberrant criminals in the heterosexual society don't represent all heterosexuals. But because of the gay lobby and its power, people don't go there. People don't address it. They don't talk about it. And as such, an element of the problem never gets dealt with, unquote. That's Rush Limbaugh. Coward. But even in his revelation of the truth that everyone is afraid to utter, Rush Limbaugh was forced to equivocate. And that's because, folks, the deviants are running the ship, and the world indeed has gone mad. Can't let Stevie play all night. Stevie, put that guitar away. We got a lot of news to do, my friend. All right, but the boy can play. All right, now, more news. We've got to dive right into the justice file, ladies and gentlemen, or maybe the injustice file. This is from East Boston, as reported by CBS. State police arrested 52-year-old Albert Diaz last Wednesday night in front of an East Boston high school after a trooper witnessed him committing several driving violations. Now, Diaz reeked of alcohol, he had bloodshot eyes, and he flunked a field sobriety test. Police later found out that Diaz had already had his license suspended for life because of his 7 previous drunk driving violations. Now, Diaz was arrested. He was charged with operating under the influence of liquor, and, also a number of other violations, operating a motor vehicle after revocation for DUI, speeding, and, just for good measure, failure to wear a seatbelt. Now, with all these charges, I do believe what Mr. Diaz is going to face is, well, I think the state of Massachusetts hopes to secure a license suspension, a double Dutch super suspension of 1,000 years or more. Yes. That's what the obvious. What are they going to do to the guy? His license is suspended for life. Yeah, a double Dutch super suspension will be pursued by the state of Massachusetts. When the bottom line, folks, is all Mr. Diaz really needs is a good beating and to be told that if he does it again, we're going to execute you. Mr. Diaz would suddenly straighten up. Suspending his... I mean, for life. He was already suspended. What's a liberal to do? All right. Now, let's move on to the war file. Now, this is serious. This is out of Cairo in Egypt. A Muslim Brotherhood rally in Cairo's most prominent mosque last Friday occurred. 5,000 people joined the rally, called to promote, quote, the battle against Jerusalem's Judaization. Allahu Akbar. That was the name of the rally. The battle against Jerusalem's... Now, I know, you watch CNN and you think it's all college students who want democracy, freedom, Levi's, and an iPad, but the folks who are organized over there call it the battle against Jerusalem's Judaization. Now, upon leaving the rally, this is according to Ynet News, which is a well-known Jewish newspaper... Upon leaving the rally, worshippers were given maps of Jerusalem's old city detailing where Zionists are aiming to change Jerusalem's Muslim character. Yes, spiritual leader Dr. Ahmed Al-Tayeb charged in his speech that to this day, Jews everywhere in the world are seeking to prevent Islamic and Egyptian unity. In order to build Egypt, we must be one. Politics is insufficient. Faith in Allah is the basis for everything. The Al-Aqsa Mosque is currently under the offensive by the Jews. We shall not allow the Zionists to Judaize Al-Quds. We are telling Israel and Europe that we shall not allow even one stone to be moved there. Unquote. That does a spiritual leader, Dr. Ahmed Al-Tayyab. He's the equivalent of, he's the equivalent of like Rush Limbaugh in Egypt. He's the most listened to talking personality in Egypt. Wynette News goes on to report that time and again, a Quran quote was uttered many times, and apparently this is a quote from the actual Holy Quran. And the quote is, not to put too fine of a point on it, one day we shall kill all the Jews. That's a line from the Quran.
Really?
Yes.
Oh my God.
I think it's the third holiest quote. Maybe the fourth holiest quote from, let's not split hairs here. Meanwhile, businessmen in the crowd were, now listen to this, folks. Because if you're just the average schlemiel reading the news, you might miss this. But if you've been listening to this broadcast, you'll understand. Meanwhile, businessmen in the crowd were urged to invest funds in Jerusalem in order to prevent the acquisition of land and homes by Jews. So folks, you always hear about the Jews are stealing the Arabs' land. They're building settlements on Arab land. Folks, the Jews, this land that they're supposedly stealing, they're paying the Arabs for it. They're buying land. They're building houses and apartments. That's how you and I would see it. But the CBS News, ABC, NBC, CNN, MSNBC, CNBC, the New York Times, they report it as Israeli occupations. They report it as land being taken from our Muslim brethren. But just keep in mind that the Jews are paying for the land. Okay? And there it is right there. Proof positive, as if we needed it. All right. One more from Cairo. This is from Channel 24 News in Paris, France. French watchdog reporters, press watchdog group Reporters Without Borders urged media organizations last week to take care to protect female reporters from sexual assault while covering unrest in Egypt following several serious attacks. Reporters Without Borders spokesman said, quote, "It is more dangerous for a woman than a man to cover the demonstrations in Tahrir Square. That is the reality that the media must face." And I would say, but you know, we're journalists. We don't accept the idea of facing reality. And folks, when I say the world has gone mad, this is a perfect example. So here we go. Here's where Reporters Without Borders came down. Now, we had two more female reporters sexually assaulted over the past couple weeks over there in Tahrir Square in the beautiful democratic Arab Spring over there. In an initial statement issued late Thursday, Reporters Without Borders had called on media organizations to temporarily stop sending women to cover the street fighting, but they later withdrew this inconveniently realistic statement. The journalism branch of France's CGT union argued with the editors, saying that they should not decide which reporters to assign to the stories based on gender, nor give in to those who would limit women to the role of wife or mother. Yes, they should be out there covering Tahrir Square. Yes, equality for women. Apparently that is so sacred that they would neglect the real warning that's necessary for any female reporter in it or around Cairo. And in the pursuit of political correctness and equality, equal access to rape by all people, they've retracted the warning to stop sending reporters and simply released a tepid warning to be careful. Be very careful out there, you ladies. We know that you're just like us. You're just like male reporters, but we're just going to say be careful. That's all. Yeah. Okay. So now from from one ridiculous story. We move to San Francisco, where there is a fountain of ridiculousness all the time, and it's fairly reliable. This is from our Science Really file. Apparently, this is according to Reuters, Google has abandoned an ambitious project to make renewable energy cheaper than coal. Yes, it's a sad day for Google. They said that they believed other institutions are better positioned to take its renewable energy efforts, quote, to the next level. Yes, which, of course, is bankruptcy. And Google wanted to avoid that, so they've jettisoned the cheaper-than-coal program. In 2009, the company's so-called green energy czar told Reuters that he expected to demonstrate within a few years working technology that could produce renewable energy at a cheaper price than coal. Weil left Google earlier this month, and the programs have been spun off to other companies who are probably just idiots, and they're destined for bankruptcy. And, we really feel sorry for Google that they weren't able to eradicate coal from the scene, because they've done so many great things for the world. Something else economic here. This is from the economics file, as a matter of fact. This is from Yahoo News. The headline reads, "The next financial crisis will be hellish, and it's on its way." Did I say Merry Christmas to everybody? It is the Christmas season. We have a quote here from a hedge fund manager named Mark Mobius, who's, he's practically a legend in hedge funds. And he says, quote, "There's definitely going to be another financial crisis around the corner because we haven't solved any of the things that caused the previous crisis. And now, through quantitative easing efforts alone, Ben Bernanke has added $1.8 trillion of long-term debt and mortgage-backed securities." You guys remember mortgage-backed securities? Those were the junk, I don't know what else to call them, junk that were on the, all this junk was on the balance sheets of these banks. And so the Fed came in and bought the junk as if it was worth something, and as if that was going to solve the problem. The fella here says, now think about that for a moment. The Fed's entire balance sheet totaled around $800 billion before the 08 crash, nearly all of it in treasuries. Now the Fed holds more than double that amount in mortgage derivatives alone, junk that the banks needed to clear off their own balance sheet. As the size of the Fed's balance sheet ballooned, the dollar amount of capital held at the Fed has remained fairly constant. Today, the Fed has $52 billion in cash, allegedly, backing a $2.7 billion balance sheet. And that, you know, you hear the word unsustainable, ladies and gentlemen, and the Fed is simply unsustainable. Now, to those who simply say, end the Fed, you know, they walk around with their signs and say, end the Fed, and they're all mad at the Fed. What they don't understand is what happens when the Fed ends, because the Fed is going to end. It's going to end on its own, but it's going to pull an awful lot down with it, ladies and gentlemen, and there's simply no easy way out. I'm afraid Ron Paul can't come in and wave his magic wand and end the Fed and make everything better. I hate to break that news to all you Ron Paul supporters, but what's happened is real. Money is real. Value is real. And, I guess I just go back to the headline. The next financial crisis will be hellish, and it's on its way. But don't worry. Don't let the economy get you down, folks. Let's go to the Washington Times, a story from Iran. Back to Iran. As if you needed any more Christmas cheer, former CIA analyst Larry Johnson has said Iran has enough firepower to effectively close the Gulf and the Straits of Hormuz, through which 40% of all the world's oil moves. He said Iran could unleash small boats laden with explosives. He says we don't have adequate cover for that. And add to that the ability to fire multiple missiles that Iran has acquired. He says, quote, "I think we could be looking at a significant wave of terrorist retaliation as well." So all of these scenarios are quite uncomfortable. Blocking the Gulf, boats laden with explosives, a wave of terrorist retaliation. The simple question, America, is do we want to see these scenarios play out before or after Iran has nuclear weapons? And they may already have nuclear weapons. I mean, does anyone remember India? When that nuclear bomb exploded there in India, nobody knew what was going on. So do we want it now? Do we want to pay now or do we want to pay later is the question. Now, Frank Gaffney, he's a former Pentagon official who runs the Center for Security Policy, said Iran's ruling mullahs have always had designs on attacking the U.S. and Israel, and an Israeli attack on their nuclear facilities may prompt them to do just that. He says, I think they will probably try to retaliate directly against the Israelis, of course, perhaps with missiles, perhaps through their proxies, Hezbollah and Hamas. Well, and I think Mr. Gaffney's on to something there. I'm sorry. I think the best strategy is a U.S.-led coalition preemptive strike. We need countries from the Middle East. We need the Europeans to get involved and to stop Iran from going nuclear, because the wave of terrorist attacks, the blocking of the Straits of Hormuz, the blocking, the choking off of the world's oil supply, as scary as all that is, it pales in comparison to the terror that will be imposed upon the world by a nuclear Iran. It's the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. So glad to have you with us as we round second. And we got an awful lot of stuff yet to do here, folks. Thank you, boys, for that backing music. Certainly do appreciate your input. Jihad. I'm getting mad. All right. Now, let's move deeper into the war file. Let's talk about Libya. This is from Breitbart's website. A top U.S. official has sought to play down fears that the conflict that toppled Muammar Gaddafi had allowed extremist groups to get their hands on weapons. Host country Algeria is one of several countries to express concern about the proliferation of weapons from the conflict. Only last week, a local extremist group said it had acquired part of Gaddafi's arsenal. I saw on TV a reporter walking through a warehouse full of shoulder-launched missiles, and he returned to that warehouse several days later, and it was empty. But we're not supposed to worry. According to shucking and jiving U.S. Ambassador Daniel Benjamin, everything's going to be fine. Let's see here. We have a Darren Smith. He's the head of a U.S. task force looking into the issues of shoulder-launched missile launchers. And he said last week there was no clear proof that extremists had acquired such weapons. Yeah, perhaps the shoulder-launched missiles in that warehouse that we saw on television, perhaps those ended up at Toys R Us for the big Christmas shopping season. Apparently, at this giant counterterrorism forum, about 150 security experts gathered there in Algiers. It's called the Global Counterterrorism Forum, and it is co-managed by the United States and Turkey, if you can believe that. The meeting gathers specialists from around 30 countries and international organizations for closed-door meetings over 2 days, in which I would guess that Islamist infiltrators do a pretty good job of getting at some of our best-kept secrets. I don't think we should be hanging around at meetings in Algiers with people at the table from Turkey and Pakistan and all that. And what happened this week now? We've bombed and killed some Pakistani troops. Pakistan's cut off our supply lines to Afghanistan. You know, Afghanistan's a big, desolate place, and, that's just pretty scary, I tell you. Anyway, it's too bad my strategy was abandoned early in the Afghan campaign. Of course, I posited the idea that once the Afghan Taliban government had been removed, the government of the state of Texas should have been sent over along with about 1,000 Christian missionaries, and we should have started building churches And we'd be 10 years along in that by now, folks, had anybody been listening to my sage advice. But instead, that's not what's happening. In fact, do I have the story here? I hate it when I decide to do a story out. Oh, here we go. Here's what's actually happening in Afghanistan, ladies and gentlemen. This is from the Politico. Across. That's right, I said across. For those of you who the cross makes you nervous and uncomfortable, you can bleep that out yourselves. A cross that had been prominently displayed outside a chapel on an isolated military base in northern Afghanistan was taken down last week. Yeah, Camp Marmal is the military base in question. It's a German base that hosts NATO forces, and the chapel in question is supervised by the U.S. Army. Let's see, I've got a quote here. Well, there's a quote from the Army Field Manual that says, quote, distinctive religious symbols such as crosses, they always mention crosses specifically, distinctive religious symbols such as crosses will not be affixed or displayed permanently on the chapel interior, exterior, or the grounds, reads the manual on how to lose Afghanistan. And folks, there was a picture of the chapel with the cross and then a picture of the chapel without the cross. And I noticed that the chapel is a tent. So I don't know how you assume that anything is permanent when you put a cross on a structure that's not permanent. That would imply to me that that the cross is not permanent. It's hanging on a tent. But the cross has been stricken from the chapel there. And now it just looks like, you know, one of those half dome-shaped, well, temporary structures. But anyway, that's what's actually happening. Your tax dollars at work in Afghanistan. All right. Now, let us move on into the politics file. Do I want to do this on Nancy Pelosi? Nancy Pelosi's upset at 60 Minutes because they had a report apparently suggesting that she had a conflict of interest regarding stock purchases. And she says that the 60 Minutes story is a right-wing smear. And we all know that 60 Minutes is famous for their right-wing smear campaigns. The report that aired apparently on 60 Minutes, I couldn't tell you when it airs or where it airs. I believe it's a CBS product, and it airs on Sundays. The program disclosed that then-Speaker Pelosi and her husband bought stock in the credit card company Visa in March of 08, while a bill that would limit the fees credit card companies could charge was pending in the House. Well, the 60 Minutes segment also alleged that some Republican members of Congress benefit from knowledge they gain regarding laws to buy stocks. It's called commonly insider trading, and it's criminal, and it's thievery. But one would ask the question, why would 60 Minutes point out thievery in the government? It just seems so out of character for CBS. I had a theory that maybe it's because everyone involved with the 60 Minutes broadcast is so old and they're about to die that they're making a last-ditch effort to atone for their many sins. I can't think of any reason, any other reason that CBS would turn on Pelosi. But the bigger question, of course, is why is Nancy Pelosi not under criminal investigation? And that goes back to, ladies and gentlemen, what I talked about earlier in the broadcast, is that we have now several generations of children who have now grown up into adults and even middle age that have been taught that there's no absolute knowledge that God is real. And they end up worshiping the government. The people in the government have taken the place of God, and you can't throw God in jail. You can't investigate our gods. That's just beyond the pale to investigate Ms. Pelosi. She's part of the ruling class, which I'm afraid to a growing number of Americans, the ruling class has taken the place of God. And so don't hold your breath for the Pelosi insider trading investigation. In fact, the scandal probably crested with the 60 Minutes broadcast. All right, now let's move deeper into the politics file. This is from the Associated Press out of Baltimore. U.S. Roman Catholic bishops have vowed to defend their religious liberty in the face of growing acceptance of homosexual marriage and what they called attempts by secularists to marginalize faith. This is the U.S. Roman Catholic bishops who claim to be pro-life but have failed to back efforts to restore legal personhood to all human persons. And they're wondering why they're in trouble. Bishop William Lurie, leader of the new National Religious Liberty Committee, condemned federal and state policies that he said interfered with the church's ability to provide social services from health care to immigrant support and international aid. Well, there's one clue as to why you're in so much trouble, Mr. Catholic Bishop. It's because you're a bunch of socialists. You are thieves, just like the government. Now, in New York, the bishops, along with Orthodox Jewish leaders and others, have complained that the religious exception in this year's law allowing homosexual marriage is too weak to be effective. You know, folks, I think of an apt analogy. These are religious leaders who should be sending out their flocks with the ammunition to refute and change the godless culture. No, not the godless culture, the Antichrist culture, the Antichrist government policy, instituting homosexual marriage, legalizing the murder of innocent people, legalizing the theft of property and monies from the citizens. But are these religious leaders fulfilling their obligation to their hapless flocks? No, they're not. Archbishop Timothy Dolan, president of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, who, by the way, the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops specifically sent out press releases against personhood legislation pending in several states. Archbishop said that the bishops are not just reacting to Barry Ho's policies, but to a broader society in a drive to neuter religion and push religion back into the sacristy. Indeed, Mr. Dolan, Mr. Archbishop, it's your weakness. It's your failure of leadership. And the fact that you're not a Christian. That doesn't help either. You know, not that I would question Mr. Dolan's faith in any way. I just don't think he's a Christian. Archbishop Dolan said he discussed the church's concerns with Barry Ho when the two men met in the Oval Office. The Archbishop said Obama was, quote, extraordinarily friendly, unquote. He also said Mr. Obama was, quote, very ardent in reassuring Dolan that the administration would look into the problems. A little shuck and jive session with Barry there to mollify the bishops there. And they've been so effectively mollified in the past that I'm sure Mr. Obama had no problem. And they were glad handing him and patting him on the back on the way out and thanking him for his invitation to the fabulous White House. Do I want to do any more on these? I really don't. I just, you know, the blind leading the blind. All right. Now, let's move into the domestic tranquility file. As I said, we've just concluded Thanksgiving, a uniquely American and uniquely Christian holiday. And we are on our way into the Christmas season, where even those who do not believe God is real give some lip service to the fact that he is real. And so for your holiday consideration, let's go to the Macomb Daily newspaper out in Michigan. Jason Lance Fish claimed to his mother-in-law that his wife, Stephanie, had run off with another man. Well, this was not consistent with what he had told his wife's boss, that he was actually taking her to rehab after he found needles in her purse. The couple's four-year-old son, Brody, was with his father when he was found by police at a rest area last Sunday night. And he later told police, quote, "Daddy put mommy in the bathtub and shot her with a gun. Bang, bang," unquote. That's a four-year-old over the blessed Thanksgiving holiday here in the United States of America, where a tolerance for crime has led to an epidemic of murder and bloodshed in a world, I attest, is truly gone mad. Now, Jason Lance Fish eventually admitted to killing his wife, but he said he accidentally shot her.
Accidentally?
Accidentally, yeah. More from the domestic tranquility file from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, the city of brotherly love. This is from CBS in Philadelphia. Police sources say thieves are on the loose in Philadelphia, stealing the packages right off UPS and FedEx trucks. Philadelphia police are on alert. Two robberies have occurred in broad daylight, less than a mile from one another. Police suspect there is a pattern. Yeah. Well, no. The police know there's a pattern, okay? Only the morons at CBS with their journalism degrees would use the non-committal journo speak like, police suspect there's a pattern. You know, because in journalism, we can never assert that anything is known or can be known. You know, it's kind of funny to read, but it's also scary because, folks, the thing that has separated Western civilization from the rest of the world and made it a better place to live is the ability to generally do business without fear of banditos and armed gangs coming to rip you off. But folks, it's all just a gilded cover of an uncivilized society. And the gilding has begun to crack. Feel like I'm I know exactly what you mean, Mr. Elliot. I indeed do. All right, now, more into the domestic tranquility file. This hit particularly close to home for me. This is from the Reuters Wire. A 13-year-old boy has been arrested for the rape of a 5-year-old girl at a McDonald's Playland in southern Ohio. The 5-year-old girl was visiting the restaurant with her grandmother and playing in the Playland area. The Hamilton County Sheriff's Department released a photo of the suspect from the McDonald's surveillance camera to the news media. The next day, the boy and his parents came into the department for an interview, and the juvenile was taken into custody. Police lieutenant said, quote, "We tell parents, don't take your eyes off your kids," unquote.
How old was this?
This is a 13-year-old boy who raped a 5-year-old girl at a McDonald's Playland. Folks, this is the generation into which we will one day have to place our civilization, and they are no longer civilized. 20 years from now, folks, three generations or more removed from the Christian values that governed or sustained our households and literally preserved America. Being removed from those values, America simply will not be. It cannot be. Because the vast majority of anyone even remembering an American will have passed from the scene. People won't even remember. Do you know that there are very few people alive today who really remember America before the legalized murder of innocent people? Where will we be when it's time for, let's take me, for example, since I'm primarily concerned for myself. I mean, when it's time for me to be rolled into the home in my wheelchair, what are the children going to have done with my civilization? But we don't give up. That's right. We have a message, folks. And the message is God is real. And he's alive. And he cares about what's happening. And we can pull back from the edge, ladies and gentlemen. But it's not going to be a secular return to financial responsibility that saves the country. It's not going to be reducing the size of government, eliminating government waste and rampant spending that's going to do the trick, ladies and gentlemen. It's going to be a spiritual awakening. And I suppose this is the time to talk about my long-term strategy. Where did I have that written down? Let's hear. I have a write-up on it. Oh, before I do that, Let me get to my Tim Tebow story. Now, I haven't talked that much about Tim Tebow, but let me do a couple of stories here real quick. let's see. I've got a story here from Politico. Rocky Twinen is a musician and self-described prayer warrior at Baltimore's Rising Sun Baptist Church, who spearheaded previous movements such as the Pray at the Pump movement to seek God's help in lowering gas prices. This is the expert, Mr. Rocky Twinen. He's a prayer warrior and recently led a Pray at the Pump movement. And have you noticed? Gas prices have come down. So let's not discount Mr. Twinen out of hand. Now, Twinen is out with his latest movement. It's a call for President Obama to emulate Tim Tebow now. Mr. Twinen says that Mr. Obama should get down on one bended knee and lower his head and pray. Mr. Twinen says, quote, "The entire sports world has been amazed at Tim Tebow's success in winning games in the last 5 minutes. He does not have the long arm of most NFL quarterbacks, but he's a terrific runner. The answer is simple," says Rocky Twinen, prayer warrior. He says, "Tebow gives glory to God for his success, and God in return blesses him." Those of us who study the Bible recall the text that says God is a jealous God. I should have left that last part. I don't know what he's talking about. Anyway, so he says Tebow gives glory to God, and so what does God do? God blesses Tim Tebow. Now listen, okay, folks. Rocky Twinen, I don't know about this guy's theology. It seems like it's all over the board. And I'm sure he makes a point here. He's a Christian guy, right? And he's concerned for President Obama. He wants him to be blessed. But here's what Rocky Twinen says. "Now, we've never heard President Obama publicly thank God for allowing him to become the first black president of the United States. Or for awarding him the Nobel Peace Prize after being in office only 10 days. Rocky Twinen, prayer warrior, says, "I dare President Obama to start publicly praising God at his upcoming campaign stops and State of the Union speech. Such acts will result in prosperity for a nation that is on the verge of a financial and spiritual collapse." Now, that's where Mr. Twinen's mystical theology tends to break down. Folks, you got to ask the question, this begs the question, I should say. Is God simply blessing Tim Tebow in return for Tim Tebow's worship? I mean, when Tim Tebow gets down on one knee and bows his head, is God then sprinkling magic blessing dust on Tebow so that he can run past the defenders and even complete a pass now and then? No, that's not what's happening, ladies and gentlemen. Tim Tebow is a homeschool kid. His parents were Christians, and they kept him from the moral corruption of the world, and they encouraged him in godliness. And just like we reported over the last few weeks about criminal and immoral behavior that results in judgment, bad things happen to people who do bad things. Judgment is built into the system. Well, folks, blessings are also built into the system for people who do the right thing. And here's, I truly believe that Tim Tebow is a forerunner of the up-and-coming homeschool generation that I believe will dominate everything political and cultural, should the nation survive another 20 years. And that's why Tim Tebow is blessed. It's not because God is blessing him in return as if Tim Tebow is earning God's grace. It's that Tim Tebow was raised right in the fear and admonition of the Lord. And the Bible says that if you teach a child when they're young about the living God, he will not depart from it. And Tim Tebow has not departed from it. And that's why Tim Tebow is blessed. And as to the long-term strategy, Newt Gingrich mentioned that we don't need to be focusing on tactical things. We need a long-term strategic answer in Syria, in Iran, and I would say in everything, we need long-term strategies. And folks, the long-term strategy is already occurring. It is Christian families homeschooling their children, keeping them from the moral corruption of the world, teaching them that God is real. That's the long-term strategy that might save Newt Gingrich and the rest of the country. And it's already underway. And those of us participating in it, we didn't even realize we were participating in a long-term strategy. We were just trying to do right by our children. And if you try to do right by your children and you actually do right by them, and what I mean by that is teaching them that God is real, that He is a judge of the world, that He loves them, that He has a plan for their lives. That's the long-term strategy, folks. Newt's not hip to it yet. I'm sure he has good answers on Syria. No-fly zone as opposed to covert, overt, sanctioned. I'm sure he's got good answers on all that. But homeschooling Christian families are the ones already carrying out the strategy outside of the purview of any politician. All right, I'm not going to do this story. I'm running out of time. This always happens to me. All right, let me do a couple more from the justice file. Because indeed, in a world gone mad, you would expect that murderers would be allowed to go free. Only in a world gone mad would that happen. Now, here's a story from Houston, Texas. Let's see here. Richard Mendoza Jr. was arrested and accused of murdering Christopher Daigle back in 2002. Daigle was shot in the back of the head. Well, Richard Mendoza, the accused murderer, walked out of prison this past Monday after prosecutors forgot to file paperwork for an indictment. So a clerical error, and now a murderer is walking the streets. Well, I should say a suspected murderer. We're not going to get a chance to try this fella and find out what happened to Christopher Daigle in 2002 when he was shot in the back of the head because someone forgot to file the paperwork. This is according to the Houston, who is this? CBS in Houston. A judge released Mendoza, but will track him with GPS. So you breathe easy there in Houston. What do we got here? Oh, from Oregon, a condemned inmate who was scheduled to be executed next month is now slamming the governor of Oregon, John Kitzhaber, for giving him a reprieve. The murderer says that the governor didn't have the guts to carry out his execution. Two-time murderer Gary Haugen had voluntarily given up his legal challenges, saying he wants to be executed. But the governor, in his eminent wisdom, said he won't allow anyone to be executed while he's in office, calling Oregon's death penalty scheme compromised and inequitable. So the governor of the state of Oregon has now sentenced hundreds more people in Oregon to be murdered while he's in office by vowing to not institute the death penalty against convicted murderers. Thank you very much, Governor. What's his name here? I know that God is always running tape, so I just want to make sure. Governor John Kitzhaber. So that on Judgment Day, we can bring him up to the front of the room and ask him about this. Mr. Kitzhaber, I think you are compromised. And you are inequitably sentencing your citizens the threat of murder and death. You foul and vile heathen scum. And he's the governor of the state of Oregon, for crying out loud. All right, more from a world gone mad. This is from the LA Times. We're probably going to go a little long, but not too long. Let's see here. I don't want to get into all that, do I? Yeah, Captain Ryan Jean wanted to perform well on the Army's psychological evaluation, but he also wanted to answer the questions honestly. So when he was asked whether he believed his life had a lasting purpose, Captain Jean, who's an atheist, saw no choice but to say no. He's at least an honest atheist. He believes his life has no lasting purpose. Well, those and other responses, according to Captain Ryan Jean, he says that won him a trip to see the post chaplain who berated him for his lack of faith. Now, folks, I've dealt with a number of military chaplains. I can never recall a military chaplain berating anyone. But, you know, atheists, they get pretty touchy when you start bringing up the idea of God. They get easily offended. So he probably felt like he was berated. Here's what Captain Ryan Jean says. He says, the chaplain basically told me that if I don't get right with God, then I'm worthless. Can you believe a chaplain would say that? I just find this hard to believe. I think Captain Jean feels worthless. In fact, he just acknowledged that he was worthless. He said his life has no lasting purpose. Is that not worthlessness? He thinks he's worthless already. I don't think the chaplain had to say anything to him. Well, anyway, now, what else? He says, The chaplain told me that if I don't believe in Jesus, why am I wearing the uniform? Because this is God's army, and I should resign my commission in order to stop disgracing the military. Now, if the chaplain actually said that, I would simply have to stand up and say, bravo, sir. I mean, the last thing we need is godless heathen killing machines in the military, for crying out loud. Guy's got an automatic weapon. You hope that he believes in some lasting value of human life, wouldn't you think? Anyways, let's see. We've got another atheist here. Jason Torpy, he's a former Army captain who heads the Military Association of Atheists and Free Thinkers, also known as the Worthless Ones. He says, what I've heard is, well, you guys aren't like us. You guys don't believe like we do. What I haven't heard is, yes, we accept you. Well, you know what, you filthy heathen? We don't have to accept you. This is a Christian country. We started it. And if you don't like it, you just get out. Move to Pakistan and see how much they appreciate your atheism over there. Or move to Canada or go to Europe, for crying out loud. They'll slobber all over you in Europe. Yes, we accept you. Yeah, well, you know, we Christians, we're kind of getting tired of laying down for you. You know, you're lucky we tolerate you, you know, because without Christ, the whole world would be a living hell, you people. And you know what? You Christians out there in the audience, you need to stop laying down for these people because we're the only reason they can sleep at night. So quit cowering behind these atheists, official. This is a story. Apparently, there's a group of atheists in the military who are seeking official recognition for their atheistic, nihilistic, worthless, nothing belief. What do you believe in? Nothing. How can I recognize that you believe in nothing? That's simply unrecognizable. It doesn't calculate with me. I'm sorry. Now, according to the reporters here, this is a story from the LA Times. The LA Times reports religion, specifically Christianity, is embedded in military culture. The chaplain corps traces its origins to the Continental Army during the Revolutionary War. Until the 1970s, the service academies required cadets to attend chapel services, and nightly prayers are still broadcast throughout Navy ships while they're at sea. And fewer than 10,000 of the 1.4 million active duty members of the armed forces identify themselves as atheists or agnostics. Folks, it's a healthy society that puts a stigma on heathens and atheists. You should feel bad if you're an atheist. You should feel a stigma, you know, like a queer or a child molester. Well, I guess it's not as bad as that, huh? I guess the stigma shouldn't be that strong. But there needs to be a stigma against atheists because they're patently unqualified to participate in civilized culture because they don't believe in anything. If you believe your own life has no value, how do you expect me to take you seriously? Please, get out of here with that. All right. Okay, I've got two stories that are relatively downers and one that's, these are all downers. I try to end on a positive note, but I apologize, ladies and gentlemen, that the wave after wave of depressing news has simply overwhelmed the end of the show, and I've got to end with these downers here. This is from WorldNet Daily from Pakistan. The Pakistan Telecommunication Authority is banning the name of Jesus Christ from any text message sent in the country of Pakistan. These are our allies in the war on terror. Yeah, they're banning the name Jesus Christ. If you put that in a text message, it'll be filtered out. Yeah. Let's see. They have an official list of about 1,700 banned words that includes a number of English language slang terms for sexual acts. In other words, yeah, I got no problem with that. They could ban the F word. Right? But they're equating the name of Jesus Christ with vulgarity and profanity in Pakistan. According to the WorldNet Daily article, Pakistan has an infamous law that bans the defaming of Islam and its prophet Muhammad. Penalties for violating this law include death. Yeah. Let's see, I've got a quote here from someone who understands these blasphemy laws. I don't know who this fellow is. Again, too many vowels. If the words coming through question Muhammad in a text message, he says, then the message will automatically fall under the existing blasphemy laws. And folks, Jesus, by his very nature, questions Muhammad. Yeah, he certainly does. I agree with the Pakistanis on that. The question is, are our allies in the alleged war on terror going to participate in banning the name of Jesus Christ from text messaging? And who's next? I wouldn't be surprised if Comcast comes out with a ban. Verizon might ban it next. It's so offensive. He called himself the Rock of Offense, so I'm not surprised that these people are offended. Anyway, the Pakistani Telecommunication Commission may be reconsidering because there has been some criticism. They say they would consider making the list much shorter after consultation with civil society representatives and mobile phone operators, and of course, bowing down in the famous bottoms-up position and praying to Allah. Yeah, and Allah is probably going to insist on the ban of the name of Jesus Christ because Jesus Christ is an inherent because Jesus Christ is indeed an inherent affront to not only Islam but also to you atheists and heathens out there. Just by the very virtue of stating his name, you have been offended and you have been confronted. I understand. And I feel so. I hope we haven't hurt your feelings. I hope you're going to be all right. No, what I hope is that you'll come to a knowledge that your life does have meaning. And that God is real. And that you are ultimately responsible for what you do and what you choose and what you say. And what you teach and what you advocate. And that you would find yourself in a position of humbleness and shame. And that you would seek forgiveness from the very God who made you, his son Jesus Christ. That's what I hope. All right, from the personhood file, this is just incredible. An Australian mother expecting twin boys was told by doctors one of the babies had a serious congenital heart defect. And so she decided to kill the baby. However, surgeons accidentally killed the healthy twin. And then the sick baby also died. The Royal Women's Hospital in Melbourne calls this a distressing clinical accident, even though they intended to kill someone. According to reports, the woman's husband, who's a nurse, a doctor, and the ultrasound clinician, who was apparently inconsolable because of the mistake, were all in the operating room at the time of the killing of the child. The family is said to be struggling to comprehend how the tragedy happened and is now considering legal action. You know what? You people need spiritual action. Legal action is not going to help. One more from the personhood file. Santa Fe, New Mexico, the only abortion clinic in Santa Fe will close as of December 23rd when abortionist Lucia Sace retires from practice. The last day abortions will be available. That's the last day that children will be killed at her clinic is December 16th. CS admits to having done thousands of abortions over her 35 years in business. The closure will leave Santa Fe. The closure will leave Santa Fe abortion-free and will reduce the number of abortion clinics in New Mexico to only five. They have five abortion clinics in New Mexico. There's only like 100,000 people living in New Mexico. It's a barren wasteland. You got five abortion clinics? Unbelievable. Anyway, I got a quote here from Operation Rescue President Troy Newman. He says, abortion clinics continue to close. We are winning the hearts and minds of the American people. Troy, you know what this is evidence of? This is evidence that the abortion pill is winning, Troy, not us. And continuing to regulate murder will not win. Personhood is the answer, and personhood will march on. I'll have a report on Colorado's personhood initiative next week after I've had a chance to review the language. And for now, I've got to go. Folks, I want to thank my friends at KGOV, Denver Bible Church, Personhood USA, and American Right to Life. And, of course, my other brother, Darryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. I'll be back with you next week, should the Lord tarry. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.